Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, how's it going? Good. I've got to turn on your microphone there. There we go.
There we go.
Any comment on what happened with the WDBJ shooting? I mean, you've been living in this community for, I guess, most of your life, right?
I've lived in Blacksburg for 14 years now and in the state of Virginia for my entire life. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, this area is, unfortunately, is used to things like that. I think this is the third time something like that's happened around here. Thoughts and prayers go out to their family and to that station. I've got a buddy that used to intern at that station. It's just a real shame when it's 6:45 in the morning. You're going to do your job, and something you have no control over, just ends your life like that. So what's even more of a shame is that the guy shot himself and can never be brought to justice. He went out on his own terms, and I hate that. So just a terrible situation, and my thoughts and prayers go out to everybody involved.
Yeah, and the video was really disturbing, too, and it was kind of hard to tell exactly what was going on there. So transitioning to Virginia Tech football, you were at the second scrimmage, and did we ever find out why Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips didn't scrimmage? It's not an injury thing, right? Is it maybe just trying to hold them out to work some of the younger guys and some of the backup wide receivers?
I certainly think that's part of it. I think they're trying to decide who their third and fourth receivers are going to be. And plus, I don't think they want Ford or Phillips to get hurt because they know they really don't have much behind them. I think C.J. Carroll's been the most productive wide receiver besides those two guys since the beginning of the spring. C.J. Carroll's 5'7", 5'6", 160 pounds. Not only is he the smallest person on the team, he's one of the smallest males on campus at Virginia Tech. Think about that for a second. And so it says a lot about him. That he can step up and be productive in these scrimmage situations as a guy that size and as a former and as a walk-on. Now, that being said, it also says something about the other scholarship players in the program that they're being outproduced by a walk-on 5'6 player. I just don't think Virginia Tech has quality depth at wide receiver. And the coaches, I think, know that, and I think they're trying to hold those starters out of contact scrimmages because they know if one of those guys goes down or both, then they're going to be in a lot of trouble.
So say week one comes around, Labor Day, is C.J. Carroll the number three receiver or is it somebody else?
Well, I think technically Bucky's going to be your number three receiver. Yeah. I don't know if he'll be number three or not. I think he'll play that game. I don't see how he can't. I mean, just unless all the practices look totally different than every single open scrimmage since the spring and the spring game. So what is that, five or six total times we've gotten to see the team since the beginning of the spring? He's been more productive than Demetri Knowles and Kevin Asante and Deion Newsome and that entire group of wide receivers. And at some point, you just have to go on production. I think he'll be on the field in some role against Ohio State, whether that's a number three receiver or not. I don't know. But, from pure production standpoint, he's got to be on the field.
What I like is his ability, once he has the ball in his hands, to make the plays. And like my word to describe him was jitterbug, just being able to break tackles and turn a 10-yard hitch route into a 15 or 20-yard gain. And then he had one really good play in the scrimmage and then got blown up by, was it Deion Clark, I think, that hit him hard?
Yeah, and then he got up and pushed Deion back, man. Well, when you're small like that, you better have some toughness in you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then you're going to get smacked down pretty quickly on the football field. But I like him. If you go back and watch his high school tape, he's a natural football player. He can make tough catches in traffic, too. I mean, that slant pattern he ran that Lawson hit him over the middle in Saturday scrimmage was a really nice catch. I think they should put him in that stack formation. You know how teams will do? They'll line a receiver up with, like, three receivers in front of him. It'll be like a diamond formation. Yeah. They should put him in the back because nobody will be able to see him.
They should
put him, like, behind Bucky Hodges and Isaiah Ford and people like that. I'm not sure the defense would even see him.
And with Carroll, do you have an NFL player you compare him to? Like, everybody's going with Edelman or Wes
Welker? I guess Edelman's the only guy, or Wes Welker's the only guy that you could compare him to, but I mean, I don't...
Got to make the small white wide receiver comparison,
I guess. But who's the guy... Is it Buffalo? No, it was the guy for the Browns who led the Browns in receiving last year, and he's like 5'7".
Oh, I cannot... Last year?
I think it was last year. Or no, maybe he didn't lead him in receiving. Maybe he was like third in receiving or something
Andrew
like
Hawkins?
That. Andrew Hawkins. Okay. Yeah, Andrew Hawkins, right? There you go.
There we go. That's
our intern.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good job. Hire him full time.
Yeah, he's from Ohio.
But, isn't he like 5'7", I think?
A little taller.
Yeah, a little taller. Okay, but... yeah, we'll look him up here during the break, but you know, you can make a comparison to him. There are wide receivers in the NFL that are making an impact now these days, despite not having ideal size, and that's because so many teams are spreading the field, using slot receivers, things like that. It's harder to get physical with these guys when they're not lined up on the line of scrimmage.
Are you a little bit surprised that Dimitri Knowles and Kevin Asante haven't showed more? They have this opportunity to be the number three receiver and step up and get playing time and get opportunities. But, I mean, they looked okay, I guess. I think Asante had a couple of drops. But, again, they haven't really showed us anything. It's a little bit shocking, like you said, with a walk-on outplaying them like they have.
I think Knowles has always had fairly fragile confidence.
Yeah.
He had a pretty good season 2 years ago. Disastrous first game against Alabama. But overall, his first 2 seasons at Virginia Tech, 2012, 2013, were pretty solid. He got off to a bad start last year, and he never recovered his confidence, and still doesn't really look like he's recovered it completely. I think you go back to, and I know Tech fans don't want to hear this, because Virginia Tech has had a lot of Cam Chancellor types, where that they've had taken the two-star guy that nobody else wanted and turned him into an All-American. But for every Cam Chancellor, there's three or four guys who sign with Virginia Tech who don't have any offers, who never do anything. Kevin Asante had no other scholarship offers at Virginia Tech. Anywhere. Virginia Tech was his only offer. Dimitri Knowles, I think his only other offer was UVA, and they don't even count these days as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, when you go get these guys that nobody else wants, yeah, you're going to have a few Cam Chancellors in there, but you're also going to have a lot of guys that just never do anything. And both of these guys are redshirt seniors, and if they were going to be good players, they would have done it by now.
Well, moving in that direction then, do you think that the recruits that they have picked up for the next year or two look like the type of guys that we can start to depend on?
As far as receivers go, I really like this wide receiver class. Love Divine Diablo out of North Carolina. He's got a big offer list. Like his overall ability. Eric Kuma's a good player. You got Sam Denmar from South Carolina, who's a fast guy. His film's really good. If they can close with Grant Holloway, I'm not sure how natural of a football player Grant Holloway is, but he is a great athlete, and he has the potential to be developed over time. But, yeah, this has the potential to be a great recruiting class. I wish they'd been able to sign a couple of wide receivers for last year's class, and considering the fact that this team, it's wide open for playing time at wide receiver, I'm a little bit surprised they didn't. I mean, they had the kid out of Richmond who ended up going to Michigan State, who was the big wide receiver exactly like they need, and he went to Michigan State instead of here, and it's just losing a guy like that from your own backyard when he could be playing right now as a true freshman and making a big impact is kind of staggering. It's kind of a staggering blow to me, at least.
Yeah.
And with speaking of recruiting, I think it might have been, I think I saw this on Tech Sideline with Jimmy Taylor saying something about, he had a chat with Frank Beamer saying that he wasn't going anywhere. He was going to be there through, you know, for the next 5 years or whatever, as long as he was committed, I guess. Jimmy Taylor, of course, the defensive end out of North Carolina. So I just found that interesting that I guess these recruits are buying the Kool-Aid or drinking the Kool-Aid that that Frank Beamer is going to be here for the long term.
Well, I mean, that's what he's supposed to tell him. Well, yeah. What can he tell him? I mean, what is he going to say? Well, you know, I'll probably retire after the next year or two. I mean, he can't say that.
Right.
The only thing I would think that they'd be saying is there's a plan in place.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you have to look at recruits and tell them, okay, listen, Frank Beamer plans to coach at Virginia Tech, but in case he doesn't, you look at what Whit Babcock has done in the past, some of the hires he's made. He's hired Tommy Tuberville at Cincinnati the day after Butch Jones left. I mean, he was very prepared. He hired Buzz Williams at Virginia Tech, a hire that nobody thought he would be able to pull off. So he has a history of going out and making big-time hires, better hires than you would think that the school would be able to hire, the program would be able to hire. So I think that plays a factor. And if you're a defensive recruit, I think you point to Bud Foster's contract. Bud Foster has a longer contract than Frank Beamer. How many schools out there have their defensive coordinator signed to a longer deal than their head coach? Bud signed through 2019. So Bud can tell recruits, listen, worst case scenario, I'm here through 2019. I'll be your defensive coordinator. Best case scenario is they'll promote me to head coach. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be your coach either way if you're a defensive recruit. I think it's a little harder on the offensive side of the ball right now because, you know, whenever Frank Beamer retires, I have a hard time seeing any of those offensive coaches still being here.
Going back to the scrimmage, what did you think of Michael Brewer? If you were to give him a grade, solid B for Brewer in the scrimmage?
Yeah, B plus, A minus, something like that, I would say. He missed one sideline throw that I thought he could have hit. Maybe he didn't quite have his feet set. But overall, I thought it was good. I mean, they dropped three or four of his passes. Had a touchdown pass that Asante easily could have hauled in, but he didn't. He was in command. He was in control. You know, the offensive line was getting moved around quite a bit in front of him. As Stacey Searles is looking for his starting five or trying to figure out who his number six and number seven guys are. I think Brewer's been done fine. He's only thrown one interception dating back to the beginning of the spring, and that was that 4th-and-25 play, Hail Mary to the end zone, this past week, and that doesn't even really count. That's not a bad decision. That's just throwing a Hail Mary. So I think he's in control right now, and if he stays healthy, I think – and his receivers stay healthy, then I think Tech will have a good year on offense.
What do you think, then, of Dwayne Lawson and the idea of him possibly being the number two quarterback?
Man, I'm in love with his potential. I'm in love with
everybody
his,
is.
I'm in love with his ceiling. I'm not going to hate whatever decision they make because I realize it's a very difficult decision, and only hindsight will tell us that the decision they make is correct. I think they should probably redshirt him, but keep him away from the scout team, keep him around Scott Loeffler, around Michael Brewer. Get him a rep every now and then. Let him play in that young player scrimmage that they have every Monday or Tuesday or whatever. You send him to the scout team. He's not learning the regular offense. He's not around Loeffler as much. You don't make as much progress. Mm-hmm. Use your walk-on. Use Jack Click on the scout team. Keep Lawson around Scott Loeffler, and that puts him in a better position to start next season. You could play him this year, but you know, right now, I think Brendan Motley is better at the read option. I think he's better at carrying out his fakes and everything like that. And his footwork is better. So it's close, though. If you really, truly believe, though, that Dwayne Lawson is going to be your starter next year, and if you can manage to blow a couple of teams out, all right, let's say you're going to blow Furman out. Mm-hmm. East Carolina lost a starting quarterback for the season today.
Yeah, wow. Kurt Benkert.
You got a chance. You might have a chance to play. And I know Tech has a tough time with East Carolina, but if they go down there and take care of business, they might have a chance to play their backups in the fourth quarter this year. If Purdue continues to be Purdue, then they might have a chance to play their backups against Purdue.
That's three of the first four games.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you really want Dwayne Lawson to be your starter next year, then you want him getting those backup minutes in blowout-type games. It's a tough decision to make.
And East Carolina was really high on Kurt Benkert. He was supposed to have a good season, and losing him 2 weeks before the season with that ACL.
That's a tough blow,
really,
man. And I have a lot of respect for their program because they came from the same place as Virginia Tech. Yeah. They just didn't get into a conference when Virginia Tech did. And I like their fans. I like their uniforms. I love it when they beat up on North Carolina. So I feel bad for their program.
And then actually with Purdue, they named their starter as well, Austin Appleby. I saw this stat about him. When he started last season, Purdue was 1-6, so maybe that's an opportunity for Lawson to get some work. Now, with him in live action, were you a little bit surprised by that, or is that pretty typical to throw out a freshman and say, what can you do in our scrimmage with the yellow jersey off?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. They wanted to see how he reacted under pressure, knowing he was going to get hit. Mm-hmm. He wasn't as good as he was in the first scrimmage, no question about that. But with him, it's all about projection. Where do you project him to be in the spring? Where do you project him to be next August? And to me, that's really the most important part about whether you redshirt him or not this season. I think they're going to play him.
Yeah,
that's my sneaky suspicion. But at the same time, I think this offensive coaching staff, they probably know they don't have a long-term future here.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I have a long-term future here covering Virginia Tech football, so I would redshirt him. But I'm looking at it through a completely different set of eyes.
See, I actually want him to play just for the sports radio aspect of things and the conversation point of things as well. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. More with him coming up next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, back with the second scrimmage, Shy McKenzie actually got a couple of carries between the tackles. I thought he looked pretty good.
I thought he looked solid. That first carry, he made that little jump cut after he got through the line of scrimmage, and I thought he looked really quick. In fact, he looked so quick that I was like, who was that? And it took me a little while, especially since he's changed numbers, to realize it was McKenzie. But, you know, I thought he looked pretty solid out there. I don't know what they're going to do with him. There's one rumor floating around that he doesn't want a red shirt, and he would consider transferring if they redshirted him.
Because I know Marshawn doesn't want a red shirt either, but yeah. Marshawn hasn't even gotten on the field yet.
Marshawn said straight up to the media, he's like, whatever they decide to do, they'll do. Yeah. Marshawn didn't have his surgery until December, mm-hmm. I mean, whereas Shy had his in October. But, yeah, somebody told me that Shy's mom is a member of one of those Facebook fan pages for Virginia Tech, and she said on there that that he was going to transfer if they redshirted him or suspended him for the year or something like that. Jeez. You know, so we'll see. I don't think they're gonna. I don't think they're gonna redshirt him. That's my view. I don't think they would even if that rumor wasn't out there.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I thought he could. I don't want to say game ready, but he just looked good in his limited action.
Sure.
It's just about the conditioning factor
Absolutely.
With him and getting back to 100% as far as that's concerned. So with the running backs, wanted to ask you this. Yes or no, Trey Edmonds will lead the team in rushing yards this season?
True, if he can stay healthy.
Okay.
You know, I think he's a better overall. I mean, he's more explosive than JC. He's bigger than JC. He's faster than JC. He runs a little upright, herky-jerky, things like that. But, you know, of those two guys, he does have the most overall talent. And I think he'll lead the I think he'll have more rushing yards than JC and is the player most likely to lead the team in rushing.
Do you see him getting the most attempts as well? Or do you see
Probably.
Things? Okay.
Yeah.
So
I think
60,
so.
60-40 split or something like
maybe
that?
Maybe something like that. It could go game by game. It's really hard to predict what Shane's going to do with the running back rotation. You remember that game? No, you remember this game 2 years ago down in Miami when Trey scored 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he had like 70-some yards and was just running all over him, but he only had 13 or 14 carries. And then JC had over 20 carries in that game and averaged like 3.1 yards per
exactly.
carry or 2.8 yards per carry or something like that. And I'm sitting there thinking, like that whole last drive, they're just running JC Coleman, JC Coleman, JC Coleman. And I'm like, where's Trey? Trey's been killing him all day. You're trying to run the clock out. And so, you know, JC, despite not being nearly as effective as Trey that game, had way more carries. So I've had some questions about how they've handled the running back rotation at times in the past, so that's tough to predict.
Now, does Loeffler have ultimate control over saying, hey, this guy's going to get so-and-so many carries, or is it Beamer as well? I mean, who makes that final decision?
I guess Loeffler does, but still, it's even if he – and I'm not saying he disagrees with Shane, because I haven't – for all I know, he might agree – they might agree 100% on everything, but even if he disagreed – it's kind of hard to tell the head coach's son to do something else.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I'm not accusing. I'm not saying that's playing a factor at all because I don't believe that it is. But I don't know. It's just one of those situations that in some programs could be a factor. Like you're telling me it wasn't a factor at Florida State or when you know Al Groh had his son on staff at UVA.
So you would. Would you say, all right, say we've got Trey Edmonds, J.C. Coleman, and McMillan as the three guys. Would you want the top two guys to get like 80% of the carries and the third guy get 20%?
Yeah, that sounds about right
about
to
right.
me. Yeah, that sounds about right. And, you know, I'm certainly open to Trayvon McMillan moving up on the depth chart if he goes out there in the first few games and shows that he's better than one of those top two guys. He's got to continue to refine his pass blocking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a quarterback in high school. It's just, and you know, even in high school, you don't throw the ball as much as you do in college. So, and when you are asked to block as a running back in high school, you're doing it against generally 190-pound linebackers and not your Deion Clarks of the world. So, that's something that almost every back, it takes him a while to make the adjustment to pass blocking at the college level. So he'll have to give himself a better chance to get on the field more if he can improve his pass blocking.
Yeah, I think Coach Beamer, Shane Beamer, that is, was showing him cut-ups of like Le'Veon Bell or something to help him on the pass blocking and those sorts of things. Was he the guy that had like the 70-yard run on the scrimmage? So yeah, he's got that big play burst. A couple of guys that I saw on defense, a couple of freshmen, Mook Reynolds and Adonis Alexander, and we talked to him at a media session last week. I'm really impressed by those two. In particular, Adonis Alexander. He was a guy that didn't have a lot of FBS offers coming out. I think it was Virginia Tech, and I want to say, I think Wake Forest or something like that, those two. But he looks to me like he could be a stud sophomore, junior year, and beyond. Like, he looks like a guy that's got a really high ceiling, and I really like Mook Reynolds as well. What do you think on those two
guys? I like
both
those guys. I thought they were both really good in the spring. It looks like they're both going to play this year. Mook looks like he's their top backup at corner and nickel. Adonis Alexander looks like he's their top backup at Rover. I think Mook is a really versatile defensive back who could really play anywhere. I think Alexander is best suited for Rover. I think they've got him in his best spot right now, but he could also play free safety. He's really athletic. I think he's got a 41-inch vertical jump already as a true freshman. And you know, we were talking in the last segment about guys with small offer lists or no offers at all. You know, more of them don't work out than do work out. But here's one guy who looks like he's going to work out, and he didn't have a big offer list either. Generally, when it comes to defensive backs, you go ahead and trust Virginia Tech staff evaluation of them, no matter what the offer list looks like. I've come to the point where I'm like, yeah, if Torian Gray, Bud Foster like you, then that's good enough for me.
Well, Chris, we appreciate you stopping in, and we'll talk to you next week. Oh, just quickly, ESPN is inaccurate about calling Tyrod Taylor an option quarterback, right?
Yeah, I would say that. You know, he ran some option, but mostly he just scrambled around when the original play call didn't work.
There we go. All right. Thank you, Chris.